Nightlife. Bite-sized history.
The disaster of the fall of Singapore in World War II had many repercussions. The lack of preparation of the British, the lack of leadership, the warnings unheeded of the Japanese advance led to the capture of many thousands of troops who'd barely fired a shot in most instances, and of course spent the war in absolute misery, dying by the thousands on Japanese projects like the Thai-Burma Railway and in POW camps almost everywhere. Australians, of course, suffered very greatly, including 2,000 soldiers who'd ended up in Java, of all places, under the command of a hero of the First World War, Adelaide lawyer Brigadier Arthur Blackburn. He'd been awarded a VC in the First World War. Till now, their story, amongst the many stories that flowed from the fall of Singapore, has not really been told in much detail. But in his new book, The Lost Battalions, author Tom Gilling looks at the fate of these men and the courage they showed in the face of almost unimaginable horrors. Tom, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thanks so much, Phil.
It was just a disaster, Singapore, wasn't it? From almost every way you look at it. And it didn't need to be.
It was a disaster, and it was a disaster that happened at exactly the wrong time for these men, these 2,000 men. They were coming back from the Middle East with the rest of the Australian forces to defend Australia against Japan, and they were nearly home. They could almost smell Fremantle when the ship was
diverted
to Java, to Sumatra initially, and then to Java.
So why Sumatra and Java? Because by then the fall of Singapore had occurred?
The Singapore fell almost on the day they docked at Sumatra.
Right. So the idea was that they would garrison these islands and contain the Japanese advance further, was it?
Well, I think even the senior Allied commanders realised that probably if the Japanese were serious about it, then they wouldn't be able to hold those islands.
No.
But the Dutch were our allies, and Churchill prevailed on Curtin to allow 2,000 Australian troops to be diverted to help the Dutch, who unfortunately had no intention really of fighting.
Well, exactly, and in fact, the mission itself was impossible. It was ridiculous. Well, it wasn't capable of ever succeeding.
Exactly. Well, among those 2,000 soldiers, there were some of them were fighting soldiers back from the Middle East, but they were bolstered by laundrymen and cooks and deserters from Singapore and a few gunners from Texas who'd been down in Brisbane and were shipped up to really to spend the rest of the war in Japanese POW camps.
Mm. So it was really a token effort by the Australians under Churchill pressure, because we know what had happened, of course, out of negotiations about where Australian troops should go anyway, whether they should go to the European theatre or back here to defend Australia. And we know what Churchill's view was that they should all go to Europe.
They should go to Europe or they should go to Burma and help the British there. But
correct,
yes,
yeah.
So Curtin stood up against the Burma mission. But
so these men, so they arrive in Sumatra and then Java, and what do they find when they're there?
Well, they come to Sumatra, and Blackburn says, this is a disaster. I want them to go back to Australia because almost at the moment they landed, then the Japanese were already sending paratroops down to capture an airfield only a few kilometres away. And so it was too late anyway. But the Dutch required them to stay, and so they stayed. And Wavell, in a long line of commanders who skipped out of danger just in time, went off to safety, leaving Blackburn and his 2,000 men to face the Japs.
Like Bennett before him out of Singapore.
Indeed.
Yeah, and you say the Dutch had no real intention of resisting the advance anyway.
Well, the Dutch were by far the biggest Allied army there, but it was largely an army consisting of Indonesians with a few Dutch officers, and the Dutch had made themselves deeply unpopular over 300 years of pretty savage occupation. So the Indonesians were in no hurry to fight for the Dutch.
Mm. All right. What happened? So what happens then?
So then they get moved to Java. They move across to Java. A lot of them have no guns. A lot of them come off the boats. The machine gunners come off the boats with pickaxe handles, half
You're
of
kidding?
Them. No.
They had no weapons?
They were on a different ship. which were they were all expected to get to Australia, but of course the troops got peeled off towards Sumatra and Java, but the guns were on another boat. So fortunately, in the hurry to get away from Singapore, a lot of Allied equipment had been left behind. So they managed to scrounge a lot of stuff from the docks in Java, and just about managed to half equip themselves to fight the Japanese.
Did they?
They did fight the Japanese. There was one battle, really. They were initially sent to guard airfields, but since there was hardly an air force worth defending there, they quickly moved to try and defend a place not far from Jakarta. Really, it was just an opportunity to allow the Dutch to withdraw, and the Australians were stuck there on an action which was never going to really make much difference. But they did hold up a huge Japanese army for some time, caused them great inconvenience before being ordered to surrender by the Dutch commander.
Exactly. In other words, they were just really sacrificed in a way, weren't they?
They were. It was considered by the Australian soldiers to be a great betrayal. They didn't feel they should have been
in the first place.
Yeah. And then they felt that they were there to support the Dutch, who really showed no interest in fighting. So they felt they'd been let down by everyone.
Yeah. How many were captured?
Well,
pretty much all of them.
Almost virtually all of them, yes.
What happened to them then?
They were initially kept in camps in Java, and conditions were not too bad initially, but got steadily worse. Food got worse. They started to get sick. But after a while, the Japanese, the food improved, and they had a feeling that they were being fattened up for something, and indeed they were, because the Japanese were having great trouble supplying their troops in Burma because of American submarines at sea and bombers on land. So they decided to build a railway from Thailand to Burma.
So they were all shipped off to work on this infamous project, the Thai-Burma Railway.
Virtually all of them. Some of the officers were left behind in Singapore, but most of the men ended up on the Thai-Burma Railway,
which was a slaughterhouse, wasn't it? I mean, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, the ordinary people of the region, of course, who were conscripted in their thousands, died on the railway.
Yes,
so did many, many Australians.
They did. I think about 2,000 Australians died building that railway, but possibly as many as 90,000 of the local
population.
Yeah.
So they all went there. How many of them survived that?
Well, it was said that every sleeper on the railway marked the death of a prisoner. In fact, the great majority of them did survive, but it's when you read about what they suffered, it's a bit of a miracle that that so many did.
Yeah, you talk about, I mean, the conditions were, it was sheer folly and madness in a way, but then the Japanese attitude towards them, though, wasn't anything other than that they were to work, and if they couldn't work, they died. They didn't have any. There was no regard for their welfare in that sense. Prisoners had to look after themselves.
Absolutely no regard. But the mystifying thing is, even on an economic basis, it was a ludicrous system to be operating, because they had a finite number of people to build the railway, and then they were killing them.
It's also the story, of course, of Weary Dunlop too, isn't it? In a way, who was of course he's well known to Australians for his role in trying to do something to assist in the health of those men.
There's an almost mystical kind of reverence, I think, for Dunlop in particular, but also for all of the medics who were working on the Thai-Burma Railway, because they put themselves in such risk. They made such sacrifices themselves to try and save as many men as possible from horrible diseases, in particular cholera. So there was an extraordinary respect for those medical officers.
And the effects of tropical ulcers too, these dreadful sores which would break out on skin, that consume the flesh and eat almost to the bone in many instances as well.
It did.
Leading to a lot of quite frankly, backyard amputations, because there weren't any operating theatres that you'd call.
No operating theatres. In fact, one of the stories I mentioned in the book describes how there were not only were there no operating theatres, but they barely had any operating instruments. So at one camp, they used to use the butcher's saw for the amputations. And after they'd made the amputation, it would go back off to the kitchens.
You mean, I know. I'm talking with Tom Gilling. He's an Australian writer, novelist, historian, and chronicler of many things. He's written a book called The Lost Battalions about a force of Australians who enlisted. They're under the command of Arthur Blackburn, Brigadier Arthur Blackburn, her VC from the First World War. They were initially sent off to Syria and the European theatre of war before coming back to Australia. Thought they were coming home before they were diverted after the fall of Singapore to Sumatra and then Java. Of course, after a futile action, ended up captives, POWs, on the Thai Burma Railway. What about Blackburn himself? What happened to him?
Well, Blackburn was separated from his men after a while. A lot of them went through Changi in Singapore before being sent up to the railway. He was sent off to Taiwan with some of the with the most senior Allied officers. Mm. And he had a pretty terrible time himself. He wasn't tortured, but food was terrible. He got sick like everyone else. But he spent most of the war in that camp away from his men.
Mm. They were made to work in Taiwan too, weren't they?
They were. And part of the story is after the railway was finished, when so many thousands had died, they were then moved off by the thousand off to Japan and Taiwan to work in the coal mines. Now, they had survived tropical diseases in the jungles of Southeast Asia, but they arrived in a Japanese winter and they died like flies from tuberculosis and other diseases caused by the cold.
Mm. How many in the end survived?
Well,
the war.
Of the 2,000 who were initially dropped in Java, around 150 of the machine gun battalion died, and around 200 of the pioneers. So three quarters of them survived.
Mm. When were they liberated and how?
I tell the story in the book of one of the old soldiers who I've been speaking to. He was working down a mine in Japan, and they were told to stop working. And walked back to the camp, and for once there was no slapping and no scowls from the guards at the camp gate, and the commander came out and said, the war's over.
Just like that?
Just like that. One of the, Neil McPherson, who I spoke to, one of the surviving soldiers, said he heard someone shout out, "Who won?"
How long was it before they got back home?
They came back in late 1945, most of them, but it took a long time because they had to come through the Philippines, and even identification was a problem because a lot of them had been so sick that it was hard to recognize them. And but they came through the Philippines, and then they came through Okinawa, and then they came back by ship to Sydney.
Mm-hmm. Looking back on the whole episode, you know, I know hindsight's a marvellous thing. And these were unprecedented times, of course, for Australian military commanders. But it was just a monumental fiasco, to use a polite word, wasn't it?
It was a fiasco, and it was really, I think, an entirely needless sacrifice of 2,000 Australian soldiers. Yeah. Now, they didn't all die, of course. But
who might have wanted to fight, actually, but in the end it weren't really contributing that much.
They were mortified too. Yeah. They'd fought very hard and very well in Syria, and then they arrived in Java, and a lot of them barely fired a shot. In fact, a lot of them didn't even see the enemy. And then they were ordered by the Dutch commander to give up their weapons, and they were humiliated.
Mm. They were. It's a terrific book. And the story is told extremely well, as you would expect from someone like Tom. Tom, it's been a pleasure to talk.
Thank you very much, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.